My name is Sharon Van. I got the mic on. Can you hear? Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about the presentation that was just made by Income Indios, because Income Indios has been one of those NGOs over the years have consistently and persistently supported the work of Indigenous peoples. And they have done so in a very quiet but determined way. And they have never interfered with our work and telling us what to say or not say in any of the meetings, but have facilitated us to be able to appear in many meetings. So I want to thank them for that work. Because we all know, all of us in here, all the Indigenous peoples who have had to use other NGOs to be able to access meetings, that many NGOs do not allow Indigenous peoples to speak freely from our nations, and they want to control us, and they want to tell us what we can say or not say. And that limits our ability to do our work, and Income Indios has never done that to us. I've never experienced that with Income Indios. For more than 30 years, I've been working, I've seen them working, I've sat beside them, they have helped us to do the work, and I think people need to know that there are non-Indigenous NGOs who have been very instrumental in helping us to do our work, and I want to thank them for their presentation, and I understood it's going to be uploaded onto a web page so people can take away the whole slideshow, or is it not uploaded? It's uploaded? Yeah, okay, thanks, Helena. And so I think when we discuss NGOs, we need to talk about the serious, I think, problems that has confronted us, particularly I'm talking from North America, Northern Turtle Island. There are NGOs operating in our territory who are state-sponsored NGOs who are controlling the agenda. And they are using our people to try to change the messaging. And I think that's a very serious discussion that we need to have. And they are meeting with government officials, supposedly on our behalf, without our knowledge. And I heard about them by accident, that they have met with senior members of the governments across Canada. I don't know what they're doing in the United States, but in Canada I know they're doing this. And they are promoting an agenda which is not our agenda, but they're using the cover that they are supporting Indigenous peoples, and that's why they get access to these meetings. And then they have their own thing that they're selling. So I think we have to be very mindful of that. And when we find NGOs that are very supportive of us, like the ones that helped us organize the meetings in 77, 81, and they have always consistently helped us, like Wilf and Income Indios and other NGOs. The World Council of Churches has facilitated many times meetings for us. We need to, you know, acknowledge that, but we also need to be aware of these other NGOs who have their own agendas and who use us to acquire funding to run their offices and to support their own people as a job. And so we become a source of employment for them. So that's, I caution our people about that. I've run into this. I've seen it in Canada. I've seen it outside the country. And we need to always be mindful of what are their alternative motives, because they don't actually love us that much, so to speak. Thank you.
Bueno, mi nombre es Morales Florencio. Vengo de un territorio bastante grande en la Patagonia Argentina, donde se encuentra gran parte de la población mapuche existente en la Patagonia. Y me gustaría hacerle una pregunta a la hermana que estaba hablando acerca de estas organizaciones que transforman esta lucha indígena en trabajo para ellos y acomodan a sus partners, ¿no? Me gustaría saber los nombres de esa organización realmente a las cuales la tenemos que tener en cuenta al momento de relacionarnos, ¿no?
Kenya Maasai People. We haven't spoken since we arrived since yesterday. Now I think I have something to say. I just also want to encourage organizations that are doing documentaries and videos to bring issues on Africa, encourage the or maybe they had, but they didn't reach the end. And also, as we prepare ourselves for the Indigenous World Conference, and we want to see a lot of African issues coming out also. I don't know whether there are people doing it, but if this is the beginning, then we need a lot of support, because when I watched the watched the speaker, was he called the old guy? What was that?
Alphonse?
It brought to my attention that we have that those kind of people also, especially back in Kenya. Some of the founders of the movement for African indigenous peoples are still alive and can be able to give a lot of history and encouragement to the youth. And I'm hoping that after this symposium, when we get back, we can also, you know, be able to bring out during the conference. It's good that we have one of our video girls from Africa doing this, and that during that time, this kind of history can be collected. And many others, I'm sure you know about a lot of Maasais who used to attend the, you know, the Indigenous People's Working Group way back from 1977, and because I know most of them, I'm hoping that this can come out alone. And on the NGOs that operate on behalf of Indigenous peoples back in our country, it is the same problem as the one I've just heard from Canada, that most of them are based in the cities and they never get to get us to in the ground. But they are very good in writing reports back. I call them experienced report writers that convince the people outside that they have been able to reach us. I don't know how they come out with the reports, but somehow I think they concur with them. And I always say we have to bring to a stop people who are very good in writing reports but that don't even get to the ground. I don't know whether this is an experience in your own nations, but also to make sure that if there is any kind of support that is given to the indigenous peoples at the grassroots level, it should reach them and not have a stop at some cities, and then we have them come back to the United Nations in New York or Geneva to say stuff that is not completely true. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente. Mi nombre es Capaz Conde, soy aymara de Bolivia y actualmente hago el fellowship en la OMPI. Simplemente quiero hacer algo muy breve sobre la OMPI. La OMPI es una agencia de Naciones Unidas especializada para temas de derechos de propiedad intelectual. En el marco del taller que se está trabajando sobre organizaciones internacionales, simplemente quiero hacer punteos muy breves de lo que está pasando dentro de la OMPI. Primero tal vez habría que definir qué es lo que se protege como propiedad intelectual. Lo que se protege como propiedad intelectual son las creaciones de la mente. Y como pueblos indígenas, los pueblos indígenas han desarrollado tienen muchísima creación de la mente. Y dentro del marco de la discusión dentro del marco de la OMPI se ha dividido esta discusión en tres áreas temáticas, que en el ámbito práctico no debería tener una influencia dentro de los conocimientos tradicionales de los pueblos indígenas. Pero se ha dividido estas tres temáticas porque cada temática viene protegida ya desde principios de propiedad intelectual. Estas temáticas son conocimiento tradicional. ¿Qué se entiende por conocimiento tradicional? Son los conocimientos prácticos que tienen los pueblos indígenas. Vale decir, por ejemplo, cuando un pueblo tiene un medicamento, o sabe las dosis de ciertas plantas, o cuando tiene técnicas específicas para la agricultura. Son conocimientos prácticos. La segunda temática es expresiones culturales tradicionales. Las expresiones tradicionales culturales son todas las formas dentro de la cual se expresa una cultura. Un ejemplo son los diseños que tenemos los pueblos indígenas, por ejemplo, en la ropa, en la vestimenta. Ya ha pasado con el caso, por ejemplo, Masái, donde una empresa agarra el traje tradicional, le hace un copyright y vende como si ellos hubieran sido los diseñadores de esta vestimenta. La tercera temática es conocimientos tradicionales asociados a recursos genéticos. En esta discusión, la OMPI no trata de establecer un sistema de protección directo, sino más bien complementar el trabajo que ya se ha hecho en CBD, Convenio sobre Biodiversidad Biológica, porque ahí ya se tiene un marco de protección para los conocimientos tradicionales, el artículo 8J del CBD. Un tema que se hace evidente es de que estos conocimientos tradicionales son apropiados indebidamente por compañías farmacéuticas, por empresas, y ya que uno de los principios de la propiedad intelectual es de que el inventor de ese conocimiento tradicional es el dueño y tiene que tener control sobre esa protección, es que se trata de ahora de crear una normativa jurídica que aún no se sabe la naturaleza de estos instrumentos o instrumento, ni siquiera el número de instrumentos o el instrumento. Se está negociando dentro de del Comité Intergubernamental sobre Propiedad Intelectual y Conocimientos Tradicionales dentro de la OMPI. En septiembre de este año, la próxima semana, la Asamblea General de la OMPI tendrá una reunión para definir el trabajo que tendrá el comité. Dentro de hay distintas opciones, pero que el comité ha recomendado a la Asamblea. Para que los pueblos indígenas participen dentro del comité, que creo que es lo importante, hay tres mecanismos. El primer mecanismo es el panel indígena. Todas las sesiones se aperturan con un panel indígena. Hemos tenido la oportunidad de tener en el anterior panel a Kalinke, chair del foro permanente, a Toki Balmain, miembro del foro permanente, y otros scholars, indigenous scholars. También al principios de años estuvo el profesor James Anaya y el panel trata de tener expertos indígenas que puedan tener una influencia en las negociaciones. Otra forma de participar es mediante el fondo voluntario. La OMPI tiene un propio fondo voluntario cuyo requisito para participar es ser una organización acreditada dentro del comité. La acreditación es muy fácil, es el llenado de un formulario, se envía a la secretaría envía al comité y el comité en una sesión aprueba a los miembros que podrían atender al comité. De nuevo, es un proceso sumamente sencillo a comparación de otros espacios de acreditación. Y una vez que está acreditado, uno puede acceder al fondo voluntario. Lastimosamente, el fondo voluntario es por... no cuenta con fondos actualmente, pero tampoco sabemos si el próximo año va a haber sesiones del comité. Esto lo van a definir los estados en septiembre. Y si va a haber sesiones del comité, muy seguramente que estados van a poder apoyar al fondo voluntario. Y tal vez la tercera forma de participación es el fellowship que tiene la OMPI, que en este caso yo soy el actual fellow. Estuvieron ya, el primer fellow fue de Tanzania, Eliamani, el segundo fellow Tresh de Australia, el penúltimo fellow Gulnara de Rusia y Jennifer Taulin de Philippines fue el anterior fellow y mi persona es el actual fellow. La convocatoria del fellowship se apertura por el mes de noviembre y para febrero ya se tiene un nuevo fellow para hacer un trabajo de 6 a 1 año dependiendo de la agenda que vaya a manejar la oficina. Para una última consideración al taller y a los chairs, como el simposio tiene aquí muchísimas personas que de alguna forma han trabajado o conocen temas de la OMPI, no sé si es posible hacer un grupo que pueda visitar al director de la OMPI. Yo esta mañana pude conversar con él está totalmente dispuesto y abierto a poder recibir un grupo. Si ustedes pueden pensar en ciertas personas que, por ejemplo, Daniel Sambo, hemos tenido conversaciones informales sobre el trabajo que hace la OMPI. Georgie Cariño también conoce, digamos, el trabajo que se hace por lo menos el marco que hay de protección para el CBD, pero no sé si podrían tener un grupo que pueda discutir esto con la OMPI, una cuestión con el director de la división, una cuestión sumamente informal. Gracias, señor presidente.
Daily Sim, I just wanted to echo what Sharon Venn was saying about non-governmental organizations, and I think it is a worldwide phenomenon that by NGOs to hijack the agenda of indigenous peoples and treat us as a commodity, basically. But I think her reference to the fundraising, and we've seen this extraordinary exploitation of indigenous peoples throughout the Arctic, and that's one dynamic, and I think it's a matter of integrity. And as far as possible outcome documents or something from this gathering, maybe just a set of principles about issues like integrity of these organizations, and with the assistance of those representatives of NGOs who are here, because they've laid out some of the key principles that really should be exercised and recognized and respected by non-governmental organizations. The only other thing I wanted to add to this dynamic is that the work of environmental organizations and their hijacking of indigenous agendas and attacks on indigenous peoples, but also usurping their basic rights, especially when they talk about conservation without engaging indigenous peoples and not respecting basic human rights standards like free, prior, and informed consent or affirmation and recognition of land rights, territorial rights, resource rights, and so forth. So I think it's an even larger dynamic in terms of appropriation of indigenous peoples and exploitation by NGOs. So maybe a set of principles with regard to those working with indigenous peoples, because those are what Sharon stated, it really is a worldwide phenomenon.
Haciendo un poco de comentario sobre las ONGs, un poquito, con todos mis respetos, quisiera, no sé si tiene que cambiar un poquito el rumbo. Las ONGs deberían tomar en cuenta de que en el continente Abya Yala hay 6 países en mayoría india. Y creo que en estos lugares especialmente me refiero, por ejemplo, en estos casos en Bolivia, cuyo nombre verdadero es Collasuyo, las ONGs creemos que debería ayudarnos más en la toma del poder político, porque somos grande mayoría. Allá ese censo que se ha llevado a cabo es completamente falso. Parece que han llegado hasta 42%, como si fuera 42% solamente el indio. Pero no es así. Es que ahí ya están tomando en cuenta como que quien sabe leer o tiene una cultura a lo europeo, a lo occidental, ya es mestizo. Bueno, entonces las cosas fallan. Pero las cosas que se deben tomar en cuenta es exactamente como Cristóbal Colón llegó, y eso se ha mantenido y se sigue manteniendo en la práctica. Nosotros somos el 90% allá y manejados metralla en boca. Sabemos muy bien que el indio no tiene respaldo armamentístico. Y bueno, esa poca gente, nosotros decimos un puñado de blancomestizos, nos están manejando metralla en boca. Entonces allá nosotros necesitamos la toma del poder político, quiérase o no. Ya un vicepresidente indio del lado considerado de derecha ya ha tomado, nos han traicionado. Ahora, considerado de izquierda, Evo Morales Ayma, nos han traicionado, quiérase o no. Entonces por eso nosotros creemos de que el indianismo comunitarista de ellos allá, que está con la ideología ancestralista, la reconstitución del Estado Nacional Collasuyo, debería ser cooperado también por las organizaciones no gubernamentales. Es nuestra súplica con todos los respetos. Han ayudado a Evo Morales Ayma, tal vez creyendo que nos van a ayudar al pueblo indio. Sin embargo, Evo Morales Ayma es nativo, como cualquiera de nosotros. Eso nunca vamos a negar. Es nativo, es indio él. Pero en el hecho se ha rodeado de la gente no india. Ellos son los que manejan. En Bolivia hay una total anarquía, no hay un gobierno, porque ya está ahí un Ramón de la Quintana, ya está Álvaro García Linera, etcétera, etcétera, quienes dan órdenes terminantes a Evo para que cumpla los mandatos de ellos. Entonces es una pena de que nosotros no podamos tomar el poder político. Si de la izquierda, de la derecha tomó ya alguna rienda, no hizo nada. Si de la izquierda toma ahora, nos ha traicionado, no cumple. Por ejemplo, hay un ejemplo bien categórico, que con eso voy a terminar. Allá se está realizando la vigilia en el Prado, en La Paz, donde yo personalmente también estoy. La vigilia responde a aquellos mayormente indios, y también hay mal blanco mestizos con quienes somos compañeros, algo más o menos de 500 afiliados ahí. Estamos ya abarcando con la vigilia, como ya caminando a 18 meses, 17 meses cumplió. Ni la ministra de Justicia ni el presidente Evo Morales Ayma no cumple con el resarcimiento que legalmente existe. Internacionalmente existe, nacionalmente han aprobado, no quiere respondernos. Por eso es que voy a hacer el favor, le voy a pedir el favor de que si se puede comentar, quiero dejar este contenido a la mesa para que conozcan, y tal vez un pequeño comentario en la prensa, un refuerzo tal vez, porque nosotros sabemos que en Chile han pagado, hasta han dado casas, han dado la salud, becas a los hijos, en Argentina lo mismo, en diferentes países, en Brasil creo que está en plena paga, pero en Bolivia, oídos sordos, prácticamente con un sentimiento inhumano. Esto dejo a la mesa, por favor, si la señorita, por favor, para comentario. Muchas gracias, eso es todo que quería.
Muy bien.
Thank you. I wanted to, having been on the organizing group for the 1977 conference, just emphasize for the younger people here that this was an NGO conference. It wasn't a United Nations conference. It was an NGO conference inside the Palais. But the Conference of Non-Governmental Organizations at that time, led by Edith Ballantyne, was a powerful, powerful force in the UN system. And that's not true today. And it's something I think indigenous NGOs can contribute, is to start building again a community of NGOs, because one reason why these negative ones that Sharon Venn was pointing out, which is absolutely true, can play these games, is that there's not a collective of NGOs that have working on a kind of consensus as existed. We probably couldn't do today what we were able to do then because of the weakening of the NGO collective community. But we had, they weren't just good NGOs, there were a mixture. The International Commission of Jurists was a rather conservative organization, Neil McDermott. We had an array under one umbrella, everyone from communists to fairly conservative people, but who would come to a consensus of how to, they agreed that racism was negative, apartheid was negative, indigenous people's oppression was negative. So how do they work? And then they couldn't have done it without the indigenous peoples. They couldn't have done it on their own. It would have meant nothing. So it's that interplay, and even that creative friction or tension within is important. So I just wanted to make that point that we have, in general, a weakened NGO community. I think the indigenous peoples within the UN system are seen as the most together people because of the work we've been able to do based on that platform we had at that time. And we have a lot to contribute to other other movements within the UN as well. Thank you.
Okay, you can have the word.
I would like to mention the works of a very important NGO, Yves Guillard, that all of you know for their books, their presence at the New York, at the Permanent Forum. And it was created in 68, so long before the first conference, 77. And two objectives of Yves Guillard was information, because at that time in the 60s, nobody knew about the situation in most of the indigenous territories. And the second objective was to help the indigenous people to organize themselves. And we mentioned yesterday Cliven, a man who played a very important role in the creation of CISA, in the creation of World Council of Indigenous People. And more recently, I think Yves Guillard played a very important role in the organization, in the creation of organization in Russia with RIPON, a place where it was very difficult to create an organization. Another thing is Yves Guillard played a role in the publication of the work of the African Commission on the right of indigenous people. In France, we created about 10 years ago a kind of Yves Guillard, very small Yves Guillard, in translating in French most of the documents distributed at the UN, because at the UN, in New York or in Geneva, many times there is no French document, although French is an official language in the UN. And we are translating many works from Yves Guillard, like the yearbook, like the Indigenous Affairs. And we have a website, GITPA, Groupe International de Travail sur les Peuples Autochtones. And we try to inform the French society about the situation on indigenous people. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I want to make a kind of like a legal point that there's legally different definition for NGO. The United Nations has a system called non-governmental organization where you must be approved by ECOSOC through a very formal process. So that's one group of NGOs that are approved by ECOSOC to work within the United Nations. Then when I work in Mexico and Guatemala, a non-profit organization is called NGO as well. In the United States, NGO is known as a non-profit organization. In other words, you apply for a license by the Internal Revenue Service or your state that you're not for profit, but you have a specific purpose. So there are different definitions of an NGO in different countries, is my point. So we have to keep that in mind. We can't stereotype all the NGOs. When we say NGOs that are exploitive, that may be true, but it may not be true, say, in the UN system. I'm sure, you know, there are exceptions. But we have to realize that an NGO has a different meaning in different places.
I think this question of the role of NGOs going forward is going to be an important one. Several times now, there's been mentioned that the next step is to achieve a convention. And that is going to be a that's going to be an even more harder fight than it was to get a declaration. But I want to look at it from this point of view. For us, the Haudenosaunee, our goal is our government having a seat in the UN. And so that means that any organization, be it NGO or whatever, for it to say that it is in support of us and that it is an ally of us, must also support our goal of having a governmental seat in the United Nations and to achieve that. Now, the and that's one of the shortcomings of the Declaration. It is a declaration of the rights of indigenous peoples. It is silent on the rights of indigenous nations. And we have to work upward from there. It's been a very interesting contradiction for us since 1977. As Bill just pointed out, that under the UN system, you have to be if you're not a recognized government, then you go to ECOSOC and you get a credentials and you come in as a non-governmental organization. And it's been an issue for us as a government of how we deal with that, how we work through that. And it's going to continue to be. And especially as we move into this next phase, because what I'm hearing is two streams of discussion. I'm hearing a sovereignty stream in which there are delegations who are committed to their nations having seats at the UN. And the second stream I'm hearing is to make the current settler governments or to work with the current settler governments to be nicer to their indigenous people. Now, that's a discussion we also need to have. Because if you are an indigenous person and your goal is to get your current settler state to be nicer to you, fine, that's up to you. You know, that's part of self-determination. My concern is that that movement is going to get more pats on the back, more pats on the head, because it's in conformity with the states, than what my government wants. And that is at the end of this entire process, however long it takes us, that we have a seat as a government, as a country, at the UN. And that's two different streams of work. And it's two different kinds of struggles. And it's also something I think we need to be clear about amongst ourselves as indigenous peoples. That if you're content with making your settler government nice, fine, do that. But don't get in our way either. Or don't allow yourselves to be used to undermine our movement, our liberation, our direction. And so that's something that we have to keep an attention to and have a discussion about as we roll down the road here. Because that is going to be the moments of split. And we've had them in the past. We've made it very clear. Organizations do not speak for nations. Our governments do. And so I think as we go forward and as we head toward a convention, this is going to be a very intense discussion, but a very worthwhile discussion for our future generations. Thanks.
Yeah, Mike Anderson from Australia. I just want to follow on from what Mike Myers has just mentioned. My nation, the Yualiai, we have defined our territories, and we don't want to be part of the Australian society as it is. We are Yualiai. We are not Australians. We have made that very clear. We have defined our territories. We've now reinstalled our ancient governance. We have advised the Queen of this. We've advised Ban Ki-moon of this. We have advised all state governments in Australia that we are independent and we are intending to issue our own land titles. We have asked them to prove how they got the land from us. They said terra nullius. The highest court in the land said terra nullius is merely a fiction because Australia was peopled. And now we have what the lady said earlier and what Mike has said. We've got a situation developing in Australia where the government funds all the NGOs in Australia. They come to this place here. They have been coming here now for the last 20 years, 30 years, purporting to be NGOs. They're all funded by government. They're all bureaucrats. There's an organisation that went to Aalto just recently, and they went over there with a submission that they say come from Australia. It came from a body of government workers. I went to that meeting and caused a hell of a storm, but that's just my nature, and said, you people don't represent us. And they are coming, and they're proposing to be the ones who will choose the 50 delegates of the South Pacific to go to that meeting in September. None of these people have a constituency, and all of these people are rejected from their communities, and they are not part of the grassroots communities from which we come from, and we call them vampires because they live on the blood of our people's misery, and that's their lifestyle, and they make their lifestyle doing that. And so I quite agree with Mike. I think we need to bring it to the table, that we need to define whether we are assimilated Aborigines, Indigenous people, or whether we are a nation state in our own rights, with our own identity, with our own law, with our own customs, with our own governance, and very clearly defined territories, and our rights to our natural resources to build our wealth and look after our people the way we want to, and to maintain our identity. Thank you.
I consider this a sovereignty movement right here, but I also consider, in the words of Jack Forbes, la inteligencia for our peoples in taking the word back and even talking about these. And I echo much of the concerns here, including what Ms. Sharon Venn had initiated to be concerned about, and deeply so. I myself and some people here witnessed that in San Diego, California last March, among the caucus of North America, similarly. I suspect that all the governments that have, like BIAs, NIN, FUNAI, all these organizations, Australia, as Michael mentioned, they're all beginning to move. So we are should be more cautious, ever more cautious. Jimbo and I were talking about this driving over here this morning, that it's become a high-stakes game for many people, including ourselves, who nickel and dime our way here. And if you can't make it, there's the dropout, you see, and what remains. So we have to fortify ourselves. We have the non-Indian support group, People of Europe, who are providing that. We need to network and develop those solidarity bases to reinforce this. And just real quickly, I wanted to speak with the WIPO person that was here, because regarding the convention, WIPO is moving very quickly in establishing a convention. It may even happen this year. You know, and myself and like Joji and some others were at the early on discussions with WIPO about 10 years ago. And it sounds like it's the same type of structure, but the convention, they're moving on very quickly. And just to caution ourselves and to begin to focus on WIPO. Thank you.
The problem we're encountering in WIPO is that they want to include traditional knowledge within intellectual property rights. But if we approach it from a human rights perspective and an indigenous cultural heritage perspective, then we would take a different position from inclusion in intellectual property rights. Because all of the intellectual property rights instruments, after they expire, for example, a trademark or a copyright, will bring our knowledge into the public domain. And when the knowledge is brought into the public domain, then our rights are no longer protected over our knowledge. Therefore, we need to consider whether our strategy is one of protecting cultural heritage in perpetuity as part of our human rights, rather than develop an instrument of intellectual property rights that will eventually bring our knowledge into the public domain and remove continuous protection. So it's very important that we begin our strategy discussions about our approach towards the WIPO conventions, because indeed it's reaching a very quick development where the states will now agree these instruments. Unfortunately, it's the United States that has taken the lead on defining indigenous knowledge as part of the intellectual property system. And when they move our knowledge in from our own system into a different legal system, then they will develop new kinds of rules to, they're calling it protection, but it's in fact short-term, time-bound protections for our knowledge. So it would be good for us to have these discussions.
Mi nombre es Rafael Mashingashi. Pertenezco a la nacionalidad Shuar, de la Federación Shuar, miembro de una organización regional amazónica, miembro de la CONAIE y miembro de la Confederación de Organizaciones de la Cuenca Amazónica. En relación a la presencia de organizaciones no gubernamentales, quiero manifestar que ninguno de ellos ha consultado previamente si van a tomar sus nombres como posibles beneficiarios de sus diseños políticos y trabajos prácticos. Comparto con alguna intervención anterior en los términos de que los pueblos indígenas en todos los países hemos sido considerados como fuentes de trabajo, en donde la parte administrativa de las organizaciones no gubernamentales se lleva un alto porcentaje del presupuesto. Es decir, ellos son empleados con buenos sueldos y, sin embargo, las poblaciones tomadas a su nombre para ser beneficiarios participan en lo mínimo. Puede ser, como en mi país, en Ecuador, sobre la legalización de las tierras, cosas pequeñas para los talleres de capacitación en derechos humanos y cosas por el estilo. En estos últimos meses, en el Ecuador, el gobierno actual los ha considerado como una amenaza. Les ha eliminado su estatus jurídico y les está planteando nuevamente a revisar sus estatutos, revisar sus objetivos, revisar sus metas, revisar qué es lo que desean hacer en el interior del país a aquellas organizaciones no gubernamentales. Tanto es así que les ha dicho: ustedes no harán como antes inmiscuirse en las políticas internas. En este momento, todas las organizaciones no gubernamentales y ecologistas se han sumado a una protesta global en contra del problema de Yasuní, conocido mundialmente por todo el mundo. Toda vez que las organizaciones no gubernamentales en el Ecuador se han juntado para apoyar a los pueblos no contactados en el proyecto Yasuní, hoy en día el gobierno del Ecuador los ha declarado organismos gubernamentales no deseables para el país, les ha prohibido hablar en nombre de los indígenas para protestar en las calles, y entonces ahora están sometidos a revisar nuevamente sus propuestas, sus estatutos. Y organización no gubernamental que no satisfaga el marco jurídico deseado por el gobierno serán automáticamente eliminados. Bajo estas consideraciones, no sé qué podemos hacer nosotros en esta reunión, si considerar importante normar o tratar de normar una guía general para que las organizaciones no gubernamentales no aparezcan solamente como fuentes de trabajo, pues solo para ellos, y que los usuarios, los beneficiarios, que son las poblaciones indígenas, sean menos participativos. No sé si tratar de encontrar una normativa general, una sugerencia general, para que a nivel general las organizaciones no gubernamentales tengan que apuntar más bien no a la participación minoritaria, sino a una participación general en todo el proceso de desarrollo que está contemplado bajo sus metas. Gracias.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a bit confused on the topic, but I think I'm figuring it out somewhat. In terms of what's been already said, I agree with, of course, Mike and his comment about the issue of sovereignty and indigenous governments. First of all, my name is Clem Sharche. I'm currently the president of the Métis Nation, and I was one of the delegates to the 1981 conference. In terms of recognizing people, I just want to quickly recognize that George Manuel, the founder of the World Council of Indigenous Peoples in 1975, was a mentor of mine. I met him in 1973 when I was executive director of the Native Youth Association of Canada, and he was very instrumental in getting me involved, you know, on the path of international rights and the rights of indigenous people. So I owe him a great debt of gratitude. As Willie Littlechild stated, I was one of the past presidents of the World Council of Indigenous Peoples. Jose Carlos Morales was as well. He was the second president. George was the first. I was the second. He was the second. I was the third. And that's an example, if we want to use the term NGO. That was an organization of indigenous people from the Americas, the Pacific, and the Sami. And it provided a great role. And, of course, IGIA was instrumental in assisting that development and publicizing it and giving out publications. The World Council played an instrumental role, I believe, in, of course, you were one of the founders, Mr. Chair, at Port Alberni, 1975, if I remember correctly. And the role that it played was getting people together to discuss issues, to disseminate information, and for self-help, and to influence outside agencies such as the United Nations and later on the Organization of American States. What I've noticed over the years, though, is there is more of a need for us to take the next step. And it's been mentioned, the convention is, you know, a next step, but it cannot stand in the way of those that seek sovereignty and their own seats within the United Nations. What I've been seeing is that we need to start moving more towards having mandated representatives of indigenous peoples, nations, and governments attending these forums where we don't have issues such as our brother from Australia mentioned, people going and speaking or purporting to speak on behalf of, you know, their peoples back at home. We need to move beyond that. So I'd like to see us take a greater initiative, particularly the young people, to advocate that it's nations, peoples, and governments and their representatives that are the ones that must take and be listened to by other people in the non-Indigenous world. And in the World Council of Indigenous Peoples, as I say, did play a great role, but it did meet its demise in 1996 because I think it moved away from what it was meant to be originally. and had other influences on it. And it was mentioned at the end of the Cold War or during the Cold War, it had a great influence. And I think it also had a great influence on what was happening, particularly in the Americas, you know, the geopolitical forces that were taking place. And many of us were caught up in that, yourself included, Roxanne, the International Indian Treaty Council, the Haudenosaunee, the World Council, you know, the conflicts, the tensions, even a little place like Central America, where, you know, the right was very repressive in Guatemala and the left was repressive, in my view, in Nicaragua. But eventually, indigenous peoples were able to mostly retain their indigenous ideology and philosophy and stick with who they are rather than adopting something else. Thankfully, things have gotten better, and in your country, of course, there was finally a great outcome where, you know, the autonomy was recognized, land rights are being put in place, and it's through the perseverance, though, of individuals like yourself and others in this room that get us there, but we need to take those next steps, and the young people that are here, of course, are the ones that are going to have to go and take those further steps on our behalf. So I just wanted to make that intervention. Thank you.
Chief Lyons from Onondaga. It's always been our intention and status to take our place as a nation. We've been that from the beginning. We've always held that position. And we continue to hold that position to the best of our abilities. What we're discussing here is very important in that we need to maintain our coalitions and understand the varieties of situations that indigenous people are in around the world. There's all levels of existence and problems maintaining, but indigenous people maintain our identities, and that the purpose of the policies of especially the United States, which we live, is to extinguish that identity and to make all Native people American citizens. And so we've maintained our independence from that at a very costly price and a very hard life to live on a principle. But we do continue, and the issue of the passports that we travel on are the documents that identify us as to our nation and who we are. On a larger, broader scale of the human species, we are facing cataclysmic events of the natural world, which is called global warming, which will engulf any and all of us, and no matter what situations we are, whether we're nation states in Australia or Europe or the Americas or wherever, this event is all-encompassing. It's global, and it is here. It is not coming. It is here, and it will accelerate, and it is accelerating at this point. So the point I'm making here is that in spite of our many and variety situations here, we have to support each and every one of us in whatever situation we are in. And certainly the position that the Haudenosaunee has been holding is the hardest one, because we do travel on that passport. Spend an hour and a half in New York getting here on that issue. And I was asked if I had a green card. And that's a very, very important discussion that we have, because it's coming up more and more. Canada asked for a green card. USA asked for a green card. My response was, do you have a green card? because of course we were here, of course this is our land, and of course we are who we are. But the situation is now that there's divisions coming at us within our own peoples, and we have to be aware of that, and we have to meet that with intelligence. We have to be careful here. After all, we are all a family. And at the same time, we have to engage our brothers and sisters from around the world, whatever color they may be, just in defense of life in itself. And the common sense that's got to have to prevail, the values that have to be changed in order for us to continue to exist as a species on this earth. If we do not change the values that are driving the forces of the world today, and I'm talking about the economic values that seem to be the one and only values that are in front of our nation states, corporations, exploitation. We all know that because it's in our lands that the exploitation happens, and we see it. We're part of it, and we're struggling with it. But on a longer and a broader scale, they do need to hear our values, because if they don't accept and understand our values, they're not going to survive. Simple as that. And the children we're looking at, these young people and their children, going to be a fight for survival. Unless we maintain our integrity and support one another. On a lighter vein, I want to inform you that next year, 2014, in Denver, Colorado, in July, the World Games, International Lacrosse Games, are going to be played, and the Iroquois Nationals are there, and we will be standing as your team, as the indigenous team of the world, and we'll be taking on the USA, and we'll be taking on Canada and all of these nations. And we're looking for your support. It's going to be a tough fight. We got a good team. We'll be there in the medals. But they tried to stop us from playing in 2010, as you remember. UK didn't recognize our passport, so our team didn't go. They tried to give us a U.S. passport, and our team said, absolutely not. We know who we are. So now we will continue on. And then in 2015, the Haudenosaunee is hosting the World Indoor Box Lacrosse Championships at Onondaga, and we'll finish up in Buffalo 2015. So we're looking for your support there as well. But anyway, those are the areas and those are the fields where we can compete. Indigenous people can compete intellectually at any level. They can compete in the art world at any level. And they can compete in the physical and the games as well in any world. And so here we are in this political arena, and we're competing. And let's not lose our perspective, and let's keep focused and pay attention to this coming event in 2014. What I'm talking about is the discussion on Indigenous people. Don't drop the idea and promote the idea to deal with the doctrine of discovery, because that is the bottom of everything here. And we have to maintain that discussion. Thank you.
Muchísimas gracias. Muy importante. La hora se terminó. Y para terminar, solo quiero resumir un poquito sobre la importancia de los o las organizaciones no gubernamentales en la promoción de derechos indígenas. Hemos escuchado aquí de que existen algunos aspectos que debemos de tener saber, como las diferencias de organizaciones no gubernamentales, pero es importante
también referir a lo que ustedes han presentado aquí sobre una coordinación que necesitamos de los o las organizaciones no gubernamentales y también conocer cuáles son sus objetivos, su trabajo en que puede ayudar a los pueblos indígenas. Es importante también que debemos de considerar de que las organizaciones no gubernamentales han estado apoyando en ciertas medidas en algunas algunos países y no, también sabemos que existen organizaciones que son como vampiros, ¿verdad? Que viven de los pueblos indígenas y son pero no son mayoría, por dicha son un poco menos, pero sí existen y debemos de estar alerta sobre eso y lógicamente también tenemos una situación sobre la posibilidad de que las organizaciones toman los el lugar de las dirigencias de los pueblos indígenas. Nosotros tenemos que, como dijo Lyons, fortalecernos constantemente, ¿verdad? Debemos de no permitir que ninguna organización sustituya la dirigencia de los pueblos indígenas, porque nosotros somos los únicos que garantizamos y vamos a garantizar el porvenir de nuestras futuras generaciones. También estamos sabemos de que hay aspiraciones de algunas naciones indígenas que han desarrollado hasta ser gobiernos locales o comunitarios y aspiran a más categoría, aspiran a ser parte de las Naciones Unidas. Es cierto de que en países como en Nicaragua también hay gobiernos no solamente regionales institucionales de los pueblos indígenas o manejados por pueblos indígenas, pero hay gobiernos a nivel de las comunidades también. Y me imagino que esto va a ser un gran reto para los jóvenes que deben de continuar, tal vez no lo vemos, pero algún día estarán aquí en las Naciones Unidas. Gracias, muchísimas gracias.
No, solamente quería hacer una referencia de que sugerencia que no nos distraigamos en estas cosas, si juzgando a la ONG, quién es esta, quién no es la otra, porque sabemos cuáles son las conservadoras, las que están en contra de los pueblos indígenas, que están con la conservación, y las ONG realmente están trabajando con los pueblos indígenas. En Argentina, por ejemplo, el gobierno también quiere hacer lo mismo que en Ecuador, prohibir a las algunas organizaciones ONG porque están trabajando con pueblos originarios en defensa de los territorios, en contra de las transnacionales. El gobierno tiene un proyecto de explotación de los recursos y acusa a las ONG de extranjeras, de inmiscuirse en los países. Así que no estamos en. Tenemos que tener cuidado con esto de hacer una condena general, sino hacer distinciones las que están trabajando con nosotros y las que no, ¿no? Entonces, eso era solamente. Y no perder de vista también un poco el objetivo de este encuentro, que es fundamental, es sacar un documento, que vayamos tomando nota y que ese documento sea conocido a todo el mundo de los que hemos estado aquí en el 77, ¿no? Y que ojalá que este grupo, que no estamos todos acá los que estuvieron, podamos seguir en contacto, reuniéndonos y formando, tener alguna influencia en los jóvenes, en los pueblos indígenas y en las Naciones Unidas y en otros importantes eventos que se hagan a nivel internacional, ¿no?